Welcome to the Opawa Baptist Podcast. If you'd like to find out more about our church, visit us on any Sunday or online at opawa.org.nz.
Song based on Ruth's declaration to Naomi when Naomi was trying to brush her off and say go home, and Naomi was leaving Moab and returning to Bethlehem in Israel. It's from Ruth 1:16. I've heard the Aparanas, who sung that song, talk about it. They've been singing it since the 1980s, and it really resonates with them because she is Pākehā and here's Māori. So shades of Naomi, the Jewess, and Ruth, the Moabite, coming together. Well, today I'm going to try to tell the story of Ruth from Ruth's perspective. She meets this Jewish family of emigres in her homeland of Moab, which is near Israel. And if you can think about a map of Israel, it's on the other side of the Dead Sea. It would be now what we call Jordan. She marries Chilion, who's one of Naomi and Elimelech's kids. In short order, Elimelech dies, and 10 years later, both Chilion and his brother die. So both Naomi and Ruth are left widows. Naomi decides to go back to her hometown in Israel, and Ruth, the Moabite, hitches a ride despite Naomi's objections. They arrive at harvest time, so Ruth goes out gleaning, which is kind of following on behind the reapers, picking up the scraps that they've missed. She's noticed by Boaz, who owns the field that she's gleaning in, who's a relative of Elimelech. Naomi tries to matchmake the two together, which if you've ever done matchmaking, typically doesn't work, but this time it does. Boaz buys the family field, marries Ruth, and they have a son whose grandson is King David, who in turn is a human ancestor of Jesus Christ. That's the Reader's Digest version. Now, I've been trying for years to get a rise out of some of you, and finally in my last sermon here on Naomi, I got a bite. Oh, I got a bite. Our cell group conversation about my apparently outrageous character assassination on Naomi got me some big pushback. So much so that last week we started with, "Are you okay, Rod?" we're sorry. I was great. And gleefully accepted their apologies with very good grace, I felt. And I've thought about that sermon since. And I don't think I really want to take anything back. Naomi's a shocker. Maybe, just maybe, she had to leave Israel because Elimelech was the man and he made it all happen. But that's about the most that I think can be said in her defense. Under great pressure from the venerable Robert Snow, I described her as one of the great so-and-sos of the Old Testament. For me, Naomi's character is one of the things that makes the story even more striking. Anyway, I said I'd talk about Ruth. So what was going on for Ruth? What was her family of origin like? Did she like living in Moab? Did she like being a Moabite? I know several old friends of mine who have emigrated to the States. They feel like Americans, and they're not coming back. They've found home. I've got another mate who's living in West Germany. He's not coming back either. I know yet other people who don't feel like they fit their family of origin. They were adopted by accident somehow. Just that sense of being a cultural misfit. Was Ruth like this? Consider these things, just as part of the background. Moab and Israel had been in conflict. In Judges chapter 3, there's a battle between Israel and Moab. The Jews thought that the Moabites were descended from Lot's incest with his daughters, an unmentionable story that we won't go into. So they looked down their noses at them. Ruth chose to follow the God of Israel rather than Mr. and Mrs. Chemosh, who were the gods of her people. And she married Naomi and Elimelech's son Chilion, when ostensibly that family was only in Moab for a season during a famine. Now, cross-cultural relationships are challenging at the best of times, but a whole lot more in the ancient world. The most likely way you were to end up with a foreign wife is if you invaded us somewhere and kidnapped one, a bit like Borat. In marrying Chilion, Ruth doesn't seem very attached to her own people. Changing the god you worship was also a bit fraught for someone raised in a pagan context. There was this common belief that Chemosh was the god of the Moabites, Yahweh of the Israelites, Ra of the Egyptians. You had your own god. Naomi may well have looked at things in this way, because when she told Ruth not to come with her, she said, "Go back to your gods." A Moab marrying a Jew carried the risk that you were going to really annoy Chemosh and Mrs. Chemosh, and they would do bad things to you and to your family, and it would be your fault. That's pagan thinking. We just don't know that much about what was going on for her. Another thing interests me that's apparent from Ruth 1:16, that she had embraced Yahweh, the God of Israel, that the God, our Father, that we were praying the Lord's Prayer to a couple of weeks ago. Like many of us here, she's a convert from a family that was not part of the people of God. So who led her to faith? This family that had shot the gap from Israel when famine struck, leaving behind the people of God and their godly inheritance in the land. Heck, it's not like they were missionaries to Moab. They were just trying to get a better life. And as I discussed last week, Naomi saw her God as being a malevolent force in her life who was punishing her. She says in verse 13, when she was leaving Moab, "The hand of the Lord has turned against me." She wasn't trying to draw Ruth to be part of God's people. She's trying to persuade her to stay. "Go back to your people. Go back to your God," she says. And she managed to deter Orpah, the other boy's widow. Even in this somewhat unpromising evangelistic context, somehow Ruth has bonded with Naomi and Naomi's God, the God of Israel. And it's not a transient sort of commitment, sort of, it's really deep and strong. She's not like one of those people who went up the front for the altar call back in the day and then woke up the next morning and continued on with their previous life. I heard an American evangelist talking a little while ago, and he bemoaned the fact that so many people in his community had made a decision at some stage. And he said, it's the biggest obstacle to the gospel in my ministry. Because they say, hey, I'm okay. I made a decision for Jesus years ago. And likewise, I think in the European churches, you said a little bit with this insistence on baptizing infants. It's almost like an inoculation. Just enough contact with the church to sort of say no in the future. Now, 25 years ago, those of you around, Rwanda went through the most brutal civil war imaginable. One tribe attacked another and maybe left 1 million people dead. This was the picture that was on the news that we had. Oddly enough, this is the bullies leaving. This was the oppressors. It was utter carnage. Big news at the time, but what wasn't focused on was that Rwanda was one of the most Christianized countries in Africa when all this went down. Saving faith, though, is not like that. It leads to a changed life. It's not just in your head, and if you want to read more about that, look at the book of James. Faith leads to work. Faith leads to change. Yes, Ruth decided here to follow the Lord, but there's so much more that that decision led to. Her confession of faith leads her to leave the land that she has known, going somewhere where she's not sure how she's going to be received. That's a brave call. Goodness me. When she arrives, she goes gleaning at harvest time, picking up the scraps that the reapers have missed. That's one step above begging. And she's vulnerable. Through the whole story, she honors her mother-in-law, who, even those of you who feel like I slandered her a couple of weeks ago, would have to admit was not a barrel of laughs. By her own admission, she was bitter. But Ruth put her first. She obeys Naomi, despite any misgivings that she might have had about her Boaz seduction strategy. And in amongst that, she discerns that Boaz is, in fact, a really good man. Real fruit, I think, of that decision. Her life has the clear marks of God's Spirit in it. People often say, well, my life is my witness. On that basis, Naomi, I don't think, would stack up so great. She's angry, she's bitter, she doesn't have a good word to say about God and does not want to be followed. She'd fail evangelism 101. Now, I heard the story of two drug addicts once who were baked off their faces one night on hard drugs. I think it was heroin. And in the adult haze, they were chatting about their lives. And one says to his mate, so, what does your father do for a crust? Oh, says the other guy. Yeah, he's a preacher, professional God botherer. No, oh, I never went to church. Oh, goodness me, I was going to church morning, noon, and night before I left home. So what's all this God stuff about? Well, he preaches that God made everything, including us, and we've really stuffed it up by doing our own selfish thing. Jesus came to save us from ourselves, offered forgiveness, new life to anyone who'd wanted a new start, to belong to him and his people, or something like that. That night, that addict cried out to the God that he'd never heard of. And his prayer was heard. And the next day, he started a new life under the lordship of Jesus. Didn't matter how bad his evangelist was. The gospel is self-authenticating. It is the power of God unto salvation for all those who turn and believe. Somehow through Naomi and her family, maybe despite them, God got through to Ruth and she was all in. I've talked today about Ruth and last week about Naomi, but is God in this story? Well, he's referred to, but not as having done anything particular interesting. Do you know this poem? One night I dreamed a dream. As I was walking along the beach with my Lord, across the dark sky flashed scenes from my life. For each scene I noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to me and one to my Lord. After the last scene of my life flashed before me, I looked back at the footprints in the sand and I noticed that many times along the path of my life, especially at the lowest bits, the saddest bits, there was only one set of footprints. This really troubled me, so I asked the Lord about it. Lord, you said, once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I noticed that during the saddest and most troublesome times of my life, there was only one set of footprints. I don't understand why. When I needed you most, that you would leave me. He whispered, my precious child, I love you and will never leave you. Never ever during your trials and testings, when you saw only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. It's probably one of Mana Book's biggest selling posters, that I suspect. Are there the footprints of God in this story? Little traces of him. Look at Ruth 2. Verse 3. So she went, she came and gleaned in the field behind the reapers. As it happened, she came to the field, part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz came from Bethlehem. She goes gleaning, and she just happens to end up on Boaz's field, and he just happens to show up that day. This was a happy coincidence, because as we'll find out later, he was a potential kinsman redeemer who could deliver Naomi and Ruth from their squalor and their pain. And he happens along that day to see Ruth and to receive a reference as to her good character. How cool. I sense footprints. And if you read all the references to Boaz, you can see that he was a man who recognized good character when he saw it. He was, in the good sense of the word, a moral man. Now, there's another interesting thing about Boaz that has some relevance to the story. Boaz was descended from Rahab, who was a woman in Jericho, who sheltered Joshua's spies when they were scoping out the promised land before they arrived, before they invaded. This is in the opening chapters of Joshua. She's described in most translations as a prostitute, or possibly an innkeeper. Bit of a difference. Now, words, and when you translate them, often have broader ranges of meaning in different languages. So, for example, in a really strongly family-based culture, the term brother could include close cousin, for example. So maybe she was not a prostitute, but clearly she was following some sort of disreputable career. She's clearly a woman of some spiritual insight. Hear what she says to Joshua's spies. I know that the Lord has given you the land and that dread of you has fallen out of us. We're afraid. We've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea. As soon as we heard it, our hearts melted and there was no courage left in any of us because of you. The Lord your God is indeed God in heaven above and on earth below. She gets it. She could see what was happening. Her family was spared, and she married this Jewish bloke called Salmon, who was Boaz's ancestor. Possibly she was Boaz's mum. Quite helpful, I think, to have someone in this story who knows from personal experience that pagan women can become faithful followers of the Lord. He was easily able to see past Ruth's foreignness and to see her true character. Yeah, more footprints, I reckon. I asked the question, was God in this? I think God's providential hand was doing all sorts of stuff below the text, behind the scenes. Working out his perfect will and his purpose, just as he does now. Despite Naomi's baggage, she still reluctantly leads Ruth into the arms of God and his people somehow. God is not limited by us, even though we often think he is or should be. If you were a believer, have you ever had to put together the story of your own faith, how you became a follower of Jesus and the journey that God has taken on you? When I was a new Christian, we were taught to write and share what was called our testimony. And it's an exercise I've repeated a number of times since. Most recently, when I came here about 5 years ago, I was press-ganged into talking at the hymn service. Thank you, Esther. Gave my testimony. But as I look at the testimony I gave 5 years ago, it's very different from the one I gave 25 years ago. Initially, 25 years ago, I was the lead of the story who chose to follow the Lord, my gracious co-star. Now when I tell it, he is the undisputed lead. I'm somewhere in the chorus or maybe an extra. He acts and I react. And now when I look back, I can see a sea of footprints all over the place. God is the star of the Old Testament story. He's a star of mine, and I dare say of yours too. I was talking with someone this week who had a string of near-death experiences, including a failed suicide attempt, which has led her to be extremely grateful to God, the God who has kept her alive, despite herself. It's a good thing to ponder our experiences, look for divine footprints, so that we can give thanks for his care and his concern for us. It will also help us get a right perspective, I think, on who is truly calling the shots in our life. What's your story? Just got a few questions for you to take away. What are the key events? Who are the key people? I sense for a number of you, Anne Sparrow is one of those key people. What new understandings along the way have you grasped about God, yourself, or God's people? What's been the growth? It's been the growing edges in who you are or what you do or how you live. What are the footprints? That's the looking back. What are the prompts? What have you been, it could be harder to pick sometimes. Where are you being pushed to now? And what are the longings? What are you looking forward to? Can I suggest you spend some time with those questions? Thank you.